This is Floss Weekly with Chris DeBona, episode 4 for May 2nd, 2006, Chromatic.
Hi, my name is Chris DeBona, and I'm here with an old friend of mine who goes by the handle of Chromatic. Chromatic?
Hi, Chris.
So, who are you, Chromatic? And why do we want to talk to you?
Well, I'm a lot of people. I just change people, but always keep the name. So right. That's why I always have the name. No, actually, my day job, I work for O'Reilly. I'm an editor at the O'Reilly Network. I handle open source stuff, free software. I do Perl.com, Online.com, Linux Dev Center. My free time, I contribute to a lot of projects, notably Perl. Perl 5, Perl 6, Parrot, a lot of the related projects there.
So I think a lot of my listeners would be really interested in the Perl angle of your life. That's why I wanted to talk to you. The other thing, I just want to sort of say a funny story. When you came to visit me at work once, you gave your real name, and I had no idea who was at the front door. That's how used I am to
Well, how do you know it was my real name?
Well, that was the name you gave.
Yes, exactly.
It could be any name as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, so let's start at a sort of basic level. Can you help my listeners understand what Perl 6 is versus Perl 5 versus Pugs versus
absolutely.
All those things? I think it would be really, really helpful. I think it confuses people. It confuses me, I should point out.
Way back in the day, Larry Wall created Perl. Mm-hmm. And I guess his goal was to take some of the stuff you did in Unix with the shell and take some of the stuff you did in Unix with C, because there were two different ideas, two different worlds there. His idea was to combine them, so you have the power of C but also the easy use of shell, and try to put those together. And, of course, Larry did this being very well-versed in what C was, what Unix was, what shell was. Mm-hmm. So he took a lot of the good ideas there. And now, almost 20 years later, we have Perl 5, which has been successful for the past decade or so.
And the current version is 5.8, right?
The current version is 5.8.8, just came out a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. We have a Perl 5.10 coming probably next year. We'll see.
Okay.
But in the past 20 years or so, and especially the past 10 years of Perl 5, it's been obvious that a lot of the things that were good and useful in Unix in the 80s and the 90s were the wrong defaults. I mean, for example, some of the things you have in regular expressions, those came about when processor time was very expensive, when user time was less expensive. And basically the wrong defaults. You know, backwards compatibility is good, but it can get in the way of the progress. Occasionally it's nice to go back and rethink some of your assumptions.
So how backwards compatible will Perl 6 be with Perl 5.8, 5.10, and the rest?
Perl 6 will feel just like Perl, but it will be a lot more consistent. It'll be a lot easier to use. It'll be a lot easier to learn. It'll be a lot more powerful. And I've programmed
it. So it would be a bit faster, take a little less memory,
faster,
that kind of thing.
Probably take up much less memory in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
It'll be faster. It'll take up a lot less memory in a lot of situations.
Right.
It'll be more capable. It will probably work on many more platforms, modern platforms.
Right.
Basically, their goal is to design a language that'll last us for the next 20 years.
Okay.
You know, twice as successful as Perl 5.
So I don't mean this to be sort of like an aggro jerk guy, but I mean, don't you think it's been on sort of a long time coming for Perl 6?
Oh, it's definitely been a long time coming for Perl 6.
And do you worry that you've lost a lot of people who would otherwise pay attention to Perl 6 to the languages like
possibly
Python, .NET, and all the rest?
Well, the way I look at it is there are maybe a million people in the world who program Perl right now.
Right.
And there are 6 billion people in the world. So if you consider all the people
we really need to kill off all the other people.
We could kill off a lot of other people. Or we could make a language that, you know, hopefully will still be useful and relevant to the million people that are programming Perl right now, but I think it's just as important, if not as much more important, to attract the people who aren't programming Perl right now, especially people who aren't programming at all.
Right.
So if we can design a language that will suit their needs, it'll be usable for them, learnable by them, I think we'll have a wonderful language.
Will it still be called Perl? Perl 6?
Yes, it will still be called Perl. I've programmed in it, you know, I have code working in Perl 6.
Right, so what is the state of Perl 6, I should ask you?
There are a couple of different ways to look at it.
Okay.
I mean, Audrey Tang started a project called Pugs last February 2005. It's 2006 now, right?
Yes.
Okay, 2005.
Checking my computer until I got disconnected from time.
Audrey started a project to play with some of the interesting stuff in Perl 6, junctions, some of the control flow operations, some of the weird higher level stuff.
Right.
And Audrey wrote this in Haskell, which is a fine programming language, research language. You know, it's highly functional, type inference, lots of interesting features. It's
actually
kind of nice to use in some ways.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Evan Martin, he is a big fan of Haskell. So I'm saying this because sitting next to us also is Brad Fitzpatrick, right? Gosh, did I get that right? Yeah, from Six Apart / Live Journal.
He's being very quiet.
Yeah, well-behaved, it's not really about him.
No.
It's about you. It's all about you.
It's all about me.
Anyways, I didn't mean to derail you.
No,
so
it's
written
nice
in Haskell.
Yeah, so Audrey Tang started a project called Pug, which is an experimental implementation of Perl 6. and that's been very useful. It's Haskell, so installing Haskell can be kind of a pain on platforms. Not as many people know Haskell as know C, for example, but it's been very useful in actually getting a working implementation of Perl 6 from the top down. What does the language look like?
Yeah, because Perl 5 was implemented in C, right?
Perl 5 was implemented in C. The Parrot project I'll talk about in a little bit is also implemented in C.
Right.
But Perl 6 is Haskell, Pugs is Haskell, which makes it really easy to evolve in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a pain to install. It can be kind of slow in some ways because of the way Perl 6 maps onto Haskell features. But it's been very useful. You can write working code in Perl 6. I've done that. It's very nice.
Interesting.
And a lot of the things in the specifications where Larry has said something, the other designers have said something, the Pugs project has gone and implemented that and come back and said, well, it's hard to implement this way, or it's hard to use this way. And Larry's gone back and thought, well, we can do it this way, we can do it this way. It's been a source of a lot of good feedback on design decisions. And, of course, it's created, I don't know, maybe 10,000 tests that we're going to use as a language specification.
Mm-hmm. So are you on the core sort of Perl 6 team? How is
that
structured?
Yes, technically I'm one of the core Perl 6 designers.
Okay. I don't know how that works. I know in the old days there was something called a pumpkin.
There's a pumpkin, yeah.
You should explain what that is.
Okay. In the olden days.
The old days.
Back
when we had an onion on our belt.
When we had an onion on our belt. It was the style of time.
Yeah.
Give me 5 Bs for a quarter, you'd say. In the olden days, back when people used tape backups.
Tape what?
I don't know. Backup what?
With what?
I just upload my stuff to Gmail.
Anyway.
back in the olden days, one of the early Perl contributors, a guy named Chip Salzenberg, I guess he was working at a company where they had only one backup machine. Mm. And if you wanted to make a backup, they had a little stuffed pumpkin. And you'd go and grab the stuffed pumpkin and put it on your desk. So everybody would look around and see the pumpkin was not on the backup machine. It's not free that Chip has the pumpkin, or Graham has the pumpkin, or Tim has the pumpkin. And say, okay, the holder of the pumpkin has the right to do the backups at that point.
I see.
So Chip said, well, we should have one person in charge of checking stuff into the repository so we don't have collisions. And this probably tells you how old the software repository was at the time that this was a big problem.
Yeah.
But ever since Chip suggested that, the person who has the sole responsibility, the final responsibility besides Larry for checking stuff into Perl, has been the pump king.
I see.
And I guess, you know, we should allow pump queens at some time, too. But
well, sure. I imagine, has Allison Randall ever held the pumpkin? King.
Has Allison Randall ever held a pump king? You'd have to ask her that. That's a pretty personal question.
That's not how I meant it. Come on.
Yeah.
Was she ever in that
there's,
part of the
There's language? A possibility at some point she'll be a pump queen or pump king.
If we were trying to find a pump queen, she would be the first runner.
Absolutely. Or Audrey, we could consider a pump
Audrey,
queen.
Yeah,
Audrey.
So.
The Pugs pump queen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways,
that's what a pump
aside
king
from
is.
Gender stratification of technology, let's go back to the.
Yeah, let's pop that off the stack.
Yeah, really.
What was I talking about?
You were talking about how things are coming along and
right,
who's running it, who's involved,
design team.
That kind of thing.
The structure of the Perl 6 design team, you have Larry, of course.
And, sure.
And Larry has Rule 1 and Rule 2, which is Larry's always right, and if Larry's ever wrong, see Rule 1. Mm-hmm. So Larry gets to change his mind. You have people like Damian Conway and
sure.
Allison Randall making other design decisions. You have implementers like Patrick Michaud, who's the Perl 6 pump king right now, working
okay.
on the Perl 6 compiler. You have myself. I tend to document things.
So you're on the documentation side of things. How funny that you should work at O'Reilly.
Funny that I do documentation. It's because I type faster than anybody else on the design team.
Yeah.
So they make me take notes in meetings.
And generally, typing fast, not so good for language design.
No, not really.
Because you tend to just put it like, oh, I'll just put a percent in here.
Yeah.
What will that do?
Exactly.
Anyway. So that's great. So you have about 5 core committers, as it were, for the future of Perl, or
well, it's more
that's a really bad way
that.
Of portraying it. You know,
it's basically the ultimate responsibility for design decisions is Larry, mm-hmm. but Larry has a handful of other people who've been working with him pretty closely over the past several years.
Yeah, now, is John Horowitz still involved, or did he walk away many, many years ago?
I think his big involvement with Perl 6 was throwing a coffee mug several years ago.
That's actually a pretty great story about the evolution of Perl 6. I don't
yeah.
know if it actually resulted in anything, though.
I think so. Well,
so it's worth saying it was in 2003, right?
It was 2000, actually.
2000. My God, that was that long
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, it was quite a while ago.
In yeah, I remember seeing John at Post Coffee yeah. Mug. But tell a story. You can
well,
probably tell it way better than I could.
At a Perl conference in 2000, there was a meeting, and the Perl 5 porters list where the Perl 5 development was going on had been pretty poisonous place and pretty unpleasant, lots of arguments, things like that. And they called a meeting at this conference to discuss the future of Perl and the Perl community. And people were talking, people were grumping, and John Horowitz, who's normally a very quiet, dignified man,
very quiet, yeah.
walked up and grabbed a coffee mug and threw it against the wall and started yelling. And said, basically, we're in trouble, we have big problems, and walked out of the room. And so at that meeting, they decided that what we needed to do was revise Perl and revise the Perl community. And that's where the idea for Perl 6 came out. Oh, let's throw away some of the backwards compatibility stuff we don't need. Let's take a chance to redo some of the design decisions that turned out not to be the right decisions, and so on and so forth. And that's taken a long time, but when you have a project this successful, a project this big, reinventing it, you don't even realize at the time exactly what you've gotten yourself into.
Yeah, so I asked before, but let's talk about a little bit more the backwards compatibility of 6 to 5. I mean, depending on the time I've talked to you over the last 5 years, it's there, it's not there,
it's
it
there.
Changes,
yeah.
You know. Where is it at right now, you know, today, April, what, 24th? You know?
April 24th, right now. We have a project called Paired, which will probably be the underlying virtual machine.
And that's written in Smalltalk? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Library of Dead Languages. We're getting an Objective-C. There's some COBOL in there. APL. Ooh, APL.
God, I hope you're kidding.
No, APL actually runs on Parrot.
Oh, well, it's fine for things to run on top of it. Yeah. I think it was written in it. I was like, you're high, right?
Crazy, yeah. Right?
Crazy, man, crazy.
Yeah, you know? We're writing Parrot in Mono right now. Mono 2. Actually, Miguel's going to hear this, and since you hate mail, I know it.
No. I think Mono's a pretty great project, but that's me. You know?
That's way off topic, though.
So, yeah, let's not go there.
Anyway, we have a virtual machine we're writing called Parrot. And the goal of Parrot is to be a virtual machine like the Java virtual machine,
right,
or the CLR or Mono. But our goal is to make that workable for pretty much any dynamic language. So it's more like the Smalltalk virtual machine or the Scheme virtual machine or anything like that.
Cool.
So right now we have something called Pony, which is a port of Perl 5 to run on Parrot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of an incremental refactoring, probably one of the most useful things to do there. But the goal is to get that working in such a way that you can have Perl 5 programs running in the same process space as Perl 6 programs.
Right.
So, for example, if you have a large project like maybe Brad's where you have a lot of Perl modules written in Perl 5, you don't have to migrate everything at once to Perl 6. Okay. You can run those in the same process space and they'll interact seamlessly.
Right.
And, for example, we have, maybe a dozen language implementations in various stages of progress running on Parrot right now.
Sure.
And they can all interoperate because of the way Parrot works.
Great. Well, actually, I might as well ask Brad this if you want to sort of move the mic a little closer to Brad. So, Brad, his site is made in Perl, right? If I remember correctly. And,
yep,
and you're a very advanced user of Perl. So, for instance, I don't know if you're still using that great caching stuff that you were talking about before or what. So, Brad, so LiveJournal runs, it's all Perl, right? I mean, you're not using any of the languages there outside of shell scripting, I'd imagine.
We have a little excess here and there for hot paths, but yeah, pretty much it's all Perl.
Yeah, no, it's like, it's been really interesting to watch LiveJournal grow, knowing that, on the back end you were doing all that pretty, what I felt was pretty innovative caching work and all the rest there. So Perl 6 is, in theory, coming at some point. What parts of it are you looking forward to? What parts of it are you dreading? What do you think about Perl 6 and the future of Perl?
I'm pretty excited. I've been following Parrot and Pugs for quite some time. We have some domain languages that we're interested in targeting or having target Parrot instead of. Currently, we like target Perl 5 and other things. And also excited about the rules matching stuff.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's an improvement over the existing regular expressions.
Oh, yeah.
So being able to match on grammars instead of a lot more expressive.
So you pass in like a back nor form of a grammar?
It looks somewhat like that.
Oh, interesting.
And allows you to match a lot more stuff that you would typically have to write parsers for. And because we have all these domain languages, too, it'd be nice to just write a grammar for it once rather than have to, write Elixir and Tokenizer and all this stuff.
Cool. So, because, LJ has its own bit of templating as well. What are you using for templating right now?
We have a domain language for that. That's
okay.
Kind of a
Perl-Java-ish
hybrid.
Yeah.
It's neither, but it kind of feels like both. And it's kind of a sick twist to meet the template it needs, does the internationalization and let people override certain parts and subclass different things. That currently targets Perl 5.
Okay.
But it'd be nice to get that. Hopefully we'll get a speed up by targeting Parrot and having the JIT come in there and help us out.
It's funny, I don't know if you remember, you probably followed this, the Iron Python versus CPython stuff.
Yeah.
I thought it was fascinating. What happened was a fellow whose name escapes me, actually, the Iron Python guy. Yeah, Jim again. And he had written a Python bytecode output for the .NET CLR. And it was, like, wicked fast. It was, like, faster than the CPython was. Because, of course, Microsoft's put a lot of resources into their JIT on their CLR. So it's pretty neat stuff. But that's a digression.
Yeah. It's somewhat related in that a lot of times when you have a language that you think is not going to be as fast as C, because you always think C is going to be the fastest thing. But when the language lets you give more metadata about your intentions, the compiler is able to do a lot of smart things.
Yeah, no, it's
really nice. So I'm excited to be able to give Perl more hints about what it can do better for me.
That's really exciting. Have you actually tried any of the Parrot stuff on the production servers, or has it all been just tests? And?
Oh, no, it's just been tinkering on my own machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really interesting. All right. Do you want to quiz Chromatic about Perl 6? Because, you know, you've got him here.
No, that's
I know,
quite
you,
right.
You can ask him.
Short of mics, anyway.
Yeah, we are. Okay, well, thanks. So we have a user picture of Perl. So one of the things that I fear, and that's sure. really capital F.
That's fine.
Of a Perl 6 move is that, you know, all those modules on CPAN, do they port well? Do they work? Do they? What happens to them? Because I've gone through the unfortunate occurrence of having to install the slash code, and it's pretty unfortunate that installation process. I understand it's gotten better since the last time I did it. You know, in their defense, but there's a lot of dependencies there, and most Perl. You know, really great Perl software. You do have a fair number of interesting CPAN dependencies. How is Perl 6 going to deal with this? Are they going to deal with it? Or are they?
Absolutely. It's something that CPAN is such a big advantage of modern Perl programs.
Yeah, it really
is. Written Perl programs, it'd be foolish not to deal with that. And so part of it is hoping that Pony will allow you to use 90% of that code pretty much right. unchanged. I mean, obviously, code with XS components or things like that, that's going to be a little harder, but a lot of the well-written portable code on the CPAN should run in Pony very easily.
Is there anything you've been telling people to do to keep it sort of forward compatible with Perl 6?
Well, I
is
think
anything they can do?
Good practices as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know, write a good test suite, make sure it's maintainable, go back and refactor it later. Pretty much everything that anybody advises on writing good Perl should apply there. Mm-hmm. Keep it modular.
Okay.
There's a project Andy Lester has started called the Phalanx Project, which takes the 100 most used modules on the CPAN by whatever metric he came up with, and mm-hmm. is beefing up their test suites, for example, to make sure that they have 100% test coverage as much as possible.
Well, that's remarkable.
So you can run that against Pony and see how well Pony's doing, for example. Hmm. Another thing Larry has been working on is Perl 5 to Perl 5 translator. And this sounds pretty stupid.
Well, it sounds like pretty similar.
Print or Quine or whatever. But actually what he's doing is annotating the parse tree that Perl 5 gets mm-hmm. with comments, positions in lines, things that the parser would normally throw away, and printing out exactly, token for token, the exact Perl program you fed in. I mean, you can do that already with Perl through a module called BDParse, which shows you, basically, it takes the parser, it creates a parse tree, it checks all that, and spits out almost word-for-word compatible Perl code, but it's not exactly the same.
Right.
So what Larry's done is proven that he can put all that information that the parser normally discards back in Perl and spit out any language he wants. Now, the language he's done right now is Perl 5, but if he can spit out any language he wants, he could spit out
C,
JavaScript, or even Perl 6.
Huh.
Brad asked if people have done this PPI, which is Adam Kennedy's project, to write a Perl parser that doesn't actually run the code. There's some talk about doing that with PPI as well. PPI doesn't work in all cases because it can't run the code. And in some cases, you have Perl programs that change the semantics and the syntax of Perl when you run the code. But PPI is a good 85, 90, 95% solution.
Unless you want to use Damian Conway's Bleach module. You know?
Yeah. there are places where it falls down, but a lot of those places aren't necessarily code you'd want to use in production anyway.
Yeah, you're not going to be using Bleach. So Bleach basically makes your...
It makes your code more white space dependent than Python.
Yeah, it's all
very
white
pretty
space.
Code. Very pretty code.
Yeah, it's very clear. Yeah, so I could turn this into the Let's Talk About Damian Conway show, but I think we shouldn't.
He's a handsome man.
Well, he's a brilliant man.
He's a very smart man.
He's come up with some amazing innovations for Perl.
Absolutely. We have a lot of very smart people.
Yeah.
And I mentioned it before, but Damian is possibly Larry's most trusted collaborator on Perl 6.
Yeah. The listeners to the show would be well served to go and visit Damian's site and see what he's done.
I believe it's conway.org,
C-O-N-W-A-Y. Yeah, I think you're right. He's the second smartest man in Australia. Is that what we're calling?
Who's the first smartest
man?
That would
be Andrew Tridgell, of course.
Is he in Australia these days all the time?
Oh, yeah. He's in Canberra.
So, okay. Yeah. Well, when he leaves, Damian is the smartest.
Yes. And that's not to say anything bad about Damian. It's just that, you know,
Tridge
is, like, maybe they're neck and neck. I mean, they're both pretty darn smart.
If they arm wrestled, Damian would win.
Oh, I can absolutely guarantee that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can just picture Church listening and going and saying, what are they talking about? So we'll leave it at that. And well, thanks a lot for talking to me about Perl.
You're very welcome.
I really appreciate it, and I think that my listeners will too. The future of languages, I think, is really important.
It definitely is. There aren't enough people
especially
thinking
one
about
like
philosophy
Perl.
Of programming language, for example, what makes it usable and useful.
Yeah, and sometimes we get kind of lost because most of the people who talk about software languages are trying to build a business around it, or they're trying to control a platform with it. And,
right.
And while, you know, of course, Perl is a platform, for some definition of platform, you know, I'd rather concentrate on the technical details than the developer's concerns.
Right.
And so I really appreciate you coming by. So thanks.
You're very welcome, Chris. It was my pleasure.
Great.
That's it for this edition of Floss Weekly. Join us every Friday, or whenever we can get it out, for another edition of Floss Weekly, discussing free, Libre, and open source software with Chris Stabona, open source program manager for Google. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.